We could go on and on and on with definitions of that kind, but I hope that the ones that I have told you about so far suffice to make the point that defining a phenomenon like the Renaissance is by no means easy. And partly it is a task of each succeeding generation of historians looking back and trying to make sense of that phenomenon, and then also of trying to make sense of the people who lived then and what they said about the world in which they lived. Now, we can ask another question. Why did the Renaissance begin in Italy? We might say, after all, that Italy had been economically precocious in the Middle Ages. But otherwise, as we've noticed, and certainly from the time of the Carolingians on, the most prominent cultural, political achievements of medieval Europe had happened in the north. Yes, Dante produces his Commedia in the very early 14th century, but that is a book anchored in medieval culture. No one would really call the Commedia a Renaissance book nowadays. But even setting Dante aside, we might think of his slightly older contemporary, Marco Polo, who makes remarkable travels and, despite being Italian himself, writes his account in French. The predominant architectural form of the late Middle Ages was the Gothic. This was called, not then Gothic, it was actually called Gothic in the 16th century. Remember Rabelais, out of the thick Gothic night? Gothic was, we may think of Gothic as quite lovely, but Gothic was actually labeled as Gothic was a pejorative term attached to medieval architecture because it was thought to be so ugly that only the barbarian Goths could have been responsible for it. Bit of an irony there. But the point is that in the Middle Ages, what we call Gothic was called Opus Francigena, the French style. The Crusades, as we mentioned, were fundamentally a French phenomenon. The University of Paris was the most distinguished university in Europe. France was a large, rich, effectively governed kingdom. Well, we could go on and on and on. I've often played the game of saying, well, let's stop the clock and take a vantage point and predict what would happen next. Well, if we did that and we sort of stopped the clock, oh, let's say 1300, and we said, okay, what's going to happen next? The chances are you'd have bet, well, France. Probably something great's going to happen in France. That would have been a perfectly prudent bet in the circumstances, and once again, you'd have lost your money. Because in point of fact, this Renaissance phenomenon begins in Italy. So why? In other words, this is not obvious. It isn't necessarily to be expected. Well, there was a higher level of literacy and lay education in Italy. That is certainly true. The urban culture of Italy produced more businessmen who needed contracts, who needed documents, who needed wills, who kept sort of the records of their business firms, and so on. There was more widespread literacy. Italians felt themselves more directly the heirs of the Romans than anyone else could or did. To live in Italy was to live with the ghosts of Rome. The ancient world was everywhere. You couldn't escape it. It's not that anybody particularly wanted to escape it, but you couldn't have escaped it if you wanted to. It was everywhere. There was greater wealth in Italy, and that wealth provided possibilities for patronage. And in providing possibilities for patronage, among the learned classes, among the economically elite classes, there was the possibility of supporting the learned classes, of providing the economic wherewithal for great arts to flourish. Italian society was less bound to feudal and chivalric values than the North. One might compare, for example, an interesting exercise. Go into your local library or maybe on your own bookshelf or perhaps in a bookstore.